This is the Paper Planes podcast, where we take a deep dive into some of the week's most notable business and marketing stories and interview high-performing business leaders and marketing professionals to find out their lessons for success.
Any entrepreneur, any founder is essentially a salesman. You're a salesman, you're a product manager, you're a customer service head, you're a finance. If you can't sell, you probably have a pretty shit business. Our goal was to have a fully personalized email journey every day, and fully customized customer journeys across a whole gamut of different environments.
Welcome to the Paper Planes podcast, episode number 65. And thank you very much for listening in again. It is great to have you along. Now, we have a gentleman on the show today by the name of Adam Schwab, spelt S-C-H-W-A-B. He is the former CEO and co-founder, and now just the co-founder, of an organization called Luxury Escapes, which is officially, according to him, one of Australia's coolest places to work. It is one of those businesses that pretty much has its entire description in the two words of its name. Look, it has some of the most fantastic venues, hotels around the world that you can book for a hotel. It does things a little bit differently from the likes of the booking.com and hotels.com and all those kind of people. And it's really interesting to hear how he does it differently, why they do it differently, and the results that has had. So a great chat with Adam, and he has a lot of background with a lot of other businesses. He's a non-executive director in a lot of other organizations too. He's got a big, long list of entrepreneurial experience, and he used to be a solicitor. He used to be a lawyer. So there you go. He did the same as me, which was do a law degree and then realize that eventually you don't like it. So anyway, very interesting, well worth tuning into. Now, before we jump into that, the usual bits and pieces, rate and review us on iTunes. We have 16 reviews and 16 ratings. I'd love to get that up to 20. So if you can jump in and just add in a review for us, we would really appreciate that. Come and follow us on Instagram, the Paper Planes podcast on Instagram. And if you are interested in doing your own podcast, go and speak to Gilberto at thepodcastboss.com, and he will help you out with that. And finally, our new website is up and live. It is www.flypaperplanes.co. So come and see our new website. We have got lots of cool stuff and information on there. All the podcasts are in there, and they have their own page now as well. So you can come and look back through all the different podcasts that we have done, find your favorite ones, and listen to some classics from back in the day. It makes it sound like we've been going on for years here. If you want to get hold of me, I'm on LinkedIn, I'm on Instagram, I'm on Twitter, I'm on Facebook, or you can just email me, simon@flypaperplanes.co. Other than that, not much else to say. So why don't we jump straight into the interview with Adam? So welcome to the show, Adam Schwab. You're down in Melbourne. How is Melbourne today?
Stunning down here, as it usually is.
No, that's a lie, Adam. It's never stunning. don't sell that lie to people, mate. It'll be pouring. It'll be snowing by this afternoon.
Blue skies and 20 degrees, so certainly
fair enough. Okay, so you are the co-founder and the – are you you're the CEO or just the co-founder of Luxury
Escapes? I'm now just the co-founder, so we've very luckily had kind of – to do the CEO duties as of a couple months ago. So I'm in and about, but I'm co-founder at large is my official title.
Okay, so explain to us all what Luxury Escapes is, because I don't think it's hard for us all to understand, but just give us a bit of the overview as to what you guys do and your mission behind the company.
Yeah, we do two things. I think essentially, like any marketplace, where we help buyers and sellers. So for you're looking at a buyer, our buyers are our customers, so those people looking for holidays. So what we do for people wanting to travel is we curate the most amazing hotels and tours and cruises on earth and offer them for a significant discount to what everybody else sells them for. And this can be sort of 20, 30, 40, 50% plus off. So for the customers, we not only to help them discover, but we also give an amazing price. And for our supply side, so for our hotels, and it's actually our hotel owners and brand partners, is we actually just make the money. So we're a marketing channel for our hotel partners. So we essentially, in really simple terms, fill beds and rooms that otherwise would have been empty. And there's okay. a lot more complexity on that as well.
Right? Yeah. I'd imagine there's more to it than that. So, okay. So that's pretty clear. And for those of you that get a chance, luxuryescapes.com, you just scroll down the front page and you just go, yep, I want to go there. Yep. I want to go there. Yep. I want to go there. It's the real top end places, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, as luxury is different things, different people. So we've had hotels like Aman, like Ritz-Carlton, top-end Park Hyatt. So we've definitely had most of the top-end brands on the site and have them. But luxuries can also be a four-star hotel in Australia. So it's sometimes a $200 a night can be luxury. So we don't intend to be serving the 1% or the 1%. We want to serve as many people around the world as we can.
Okay. I want to talk about obviously Luxury Escapes in a bit of detail and, you know, how you go to market, et cetera, et cetera. I just want to take a step back straight away because like me, you are somebody who went to university and did law. And obviously what you're doing now is a significant step away from getting a degree in law. What made you want to choose law in the first place when you went to university?
That's a good question. I think there's an element when you do it was called VCE in my day. I think it still is. When you do VCE, so you finish your final year of school, and if you get a good enough mark, there's a pretty general pressure to use it in a way. So that's medicine, that's law, that could be commerce, engineering. I did want to be a lawyer as well, so there was not really knowing exactly what that involved. But you sort of watch enough TV shows and read enough books to get a probably more glamorous picture of what it is. The actual job as a lawyer is incredibly boring, and it's hard to imagine anybody liking it, having sort of worked there for 5 years. But you do learn some incredible skills as a lawyer, and sort of precision and not getting things wrong, especially if a top tier firm you're amongst. Generally really intelligent people and really hardworking people. You learn unbelievable discipline that you probably don't get outside a high-level professional services firm, be it law firm, investment bank, and probably a top-tier accounting firm and consulting firm.
Post that law career, and I'll talk about that in a bit more detail in a minute. Post that law career, you've gone into roles that obviously have a much more of an entrepreneurial, slant to them. Is that something that you had growing up? Did you feel that you were, destined for some sort of entrepreneurial kind of, career, or were you quite happy to sort of be one of those, this sounds really negative. I don't mean it like this, but a cog in the wheel in terms of that corporate kind of person.
Sure. I think I was growing up, so I finished school late 97, uni through to 2002. Back then, being an entrepreneur wasn't that cool. Being an entrepreneur, people were talking about Skase and Bond and all that, those Spalmans, all those kind of guys. Entrepreneurialism was sort of almost analogous to bankruptcy and criminality versus now when you've got your Zuckerbergs, Musk, Spiegels, et cetera. Entrepreneurship's cool, and everybody wants to be an entrepreneur. So it's when I finished uni, everyone wants to be an investment banker and a lawyer and a consultant. I probably envisaged myself going from law to banking, I suspect, but ultimately our path took a different route. Obviously, we're pretty grateful about it. But when I left Freehills in 2005, and I took a leave of absence initially, but never went back, people looked at us, certainly looked at me as has been insane. Like, why would you leave a blue chip law firm to start what was essentially a backpacker apartments business with no money? No doubt, looked at my face, and God knows what the same about back, but I'm sure it was even less positive.
Well, explain to me what was going through your head at that time you'd obviously made the decision that, being a lawyer, and you'd done that for nearly 5 years, but you'd made the decision that, being a lawyer probably wasn't for you, and you're going into a backpackers business. was that something that kind of, was that like a light bulb moment one night, or was that something that sort of evolved over a couple of years?
I was a lawyer for 2.5 years and a paralegal for 2.5 years. So I wasn't, right. I don't think I would have lasted 5 years proofreading documents. But I was pretty fortunate that a good friend of mine from school, Jeremy, who we'd had a couple of small businesses, really sort of side, well, I guess you call them a side hustle now. Back then there was no such term. And we had a few little side things, and he wanted to do something full-time. And he really pushed me into it. And I was forever indebted to Jez for having that real drive. We were 24 at the time. He quit ANZ. He was trading at ANZ and really sort of pushed me into it. And had he not, who knows what I would have been doing. But it was definitely, I was always sort of the operations guy, and he was certainly in the early days, the ideas guy. And it was a really nice combination. Obviously, we're still equal partners, equal shareholders this day. And he's still sort of more the high-level guy, and more recently I've stepped back, but I've traditionally been the operations and sort of hands-on guy. So it's been a really interesting partnership. And without Jez, he found our initial apartment in the city on the ANZ bulletin board and forced me to look at it, and we took it, and another one, and it was a really combination of sort of my slight conservatism initially and Jeremy's bullishness, and that's what sort of got us over the line.
Did you... I mean, again, you did that business for a decent length of time. Did it help that you'd come from that? I mean, you're saying he was ANZ or ex-ANZ, you were ex-law firm. Did it help that you guys had that corporate experience when you walked into, you know what was a startup back in, 2005?
2 meter by 2 meter office, I think, in Jeremy's dad's accounting firm, that basically could have been condemned. It's interesting. I think corporate and a certain type, certainly law, teaches you that great precision. In the early days, probably not that helpful. As another thing that law teaches you is you don't get bullied. So if you get be it from regulators, be it from other counterparties, you're never going to get pushed around. I'll get a legal letter. It doesn't matter how threatening it is. It takes a fair bit to scare me. So it's that confidence and that swagger that you can have as an ex-lawyer, especially a top-tier firm ex-lawyer, that you can't be bullied. That sort of came later. In the early days, it's pure hustle. Yeah, 70 grand between us. I'd get my dad's trip. My dad was a builder. I'd borrow his trailer. I'd go and pick up secondhand furniture for $100. I didn't even know how to use the trailer, so I'd be struggling driving it, almost crashing the car. It was sort of as basic and as menial as you can. I guess you look at our office now with 100 people in it. Pretty nice flash space. Yeah. And you couldn't sort of come further. But yeah, in the early days, it was as anti-corporate as you can get, and it was hustle. It was how do we get stuff cheap and how do we sell? And that's any entrepreneur, any founder is essentially a salesman. You're a salesman. You're a product manager. You're a customer service head. You're a finance head. You got to do all that stuff. But if you can't sell, you probably have a pretty shit business. And ultimately, to this day, it's what. If I sort of look at what I think my strengths are, one of my strengths are is sort of being able to understand what the customer wants and making the product match that, be it an IT product or actually a holiday product. And that's essentially selling. So if you can't sell, you're probably going to struggle to run a business.
It's one of the common things through every single one of the podcasts I've ever done is that successful entrepreneurs have learned how to sell. And whether that's some of them, doing their teenage years in Coles and Woolworths, standing behind a counter, talking to customers, or, whether that's more advanced stuff. But that common theme about the ability to sell is through all the successful people that I've spoken to. How did you, you've come from a background that's, law degree, law firm, paralegal. That's not traditionally a space that you learn how to sell.
I think it's actually a really interesting point you make, and I've sort of reflected on that a bit. And yeah, junior lawyers certainly aren't selling much, but I think any great lawyer any good partner is selling the services of the firm. So when you've got a partner, you've got to be a good salesman. But so before that, in the actual role of a lawyer or a banker, certainly, is you've got to be able to create win-wins. A good lawyer can always create a win-win. A bad lawyer won't. And that's a good lawyer, a bad lawyer. But a great lawyer can put themselves in the shoes of the other party and get both parties, be it litigation, be it sort of corporate negotiation, get them to agree to a win-win. I think I'm not a sort of old-school salesperson by any stretch, but what I think I can do pretty well is how can we create win-wins? And essentially Luxury Escapes is a business of win-wins. It's a business where the hotel wins, the customer wins, and we win by sitting in the middle. And that's what we've – and it's really nice being in a business where you make people happy. And that's why people like to work here, and why I've liked to work here so much is we're not an adversary. We're not a bank or a bank, for example, who sort of makes their money to a large extent ripping off customers. The telco largely makes its money by investing in capital and then squeezing their customers best they can, knowing that it's pretty difficult to move. We're the opposite. It's very easy for our customers to buy a holiday from 50 other places, be it online or offline. Yeah. We've got to treat them really well. We've got to create these win-wins that create huge value for the customers in terms of getting an amazing holiday for a really good price. But also we need to create profitability for our hotel partners. If we don't, they won't give the deals we need to give our customers.
You mentioned one other thing was resilience, which I think is obviously, you know, hugely important for startup business owners, anybody out there. How do you, I mean, you've had that, as you say, you know, being a lawyer learns, you know, teaches you resilience. How do you, your team members, the people that work for you, people that you come across, how do you teach people to be more resilient?
I don't think you can teach it, unfortunately. I've never been able to, obviously you can try and hire for it, but I think it's just a natural mentality. Something with my mentality and whatever challenge I get, be it anything from a parking fine to a bigger challenge, my first thought is, how can I beat this? How can I win? And assuming if you get a parking fine and you've done the wrong thing, well, that's that. You deserve it. But yeah. if there is a sense of injustice or we've been hard done by or the decision of a regulator or corporate is wrong, my natural inclination is to fight and fight hard regardless of the odds. And you don't always win, but win most of the times, and it's just that, I think that sort of grit is really just an undying belief that ultimately the right result will prevail. And obviously you need to know what the right result is. Like, there's no point challenging things that you're clearly wrong with. But if someone else has had, be it a corporate making the wrong decision or regular making the wrong decision or whoever making the wrong decision, if something's wrong, to fight it, not to simply accept the status quo, you usually try and ingrain that into your staff. But ultimately it's really hard.
Okay, so you've done living corporate apartments. What brought that to an end?
It's actually still going. It's been a great survivor. It's 14 years now, still going. Has been buffeted by Airbnb significantly. So whilst we use Airbnb a little bit, Airbnb created this massive platform, which essentially was a big competitor in many ways, and obviously amazing business. So it still goes, but in 2010, when we started the precursor of Luxury Escapes, the initial plan was I would stay working on Living Corporate and Jeremy would work on what became Luxury Escapes. But in the end, it was such an operational workload that I just flipped completely to what was deals.com.au and became Luxury Escapes. So we've pivoted a few times. That was obviously the biggest pivot we've done, but we've been a couple of big pivots through our careers and like fortunately worked out well in the end, but you never know where it's going to end up.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about Luxury Escapes then, because obviously the main question for me with this is that, you know, you're in a crowded marketplace. It's a busy old place out there. How do you make sure you guys stand out from all the other, you know, all the other websites, the holiday websites out there?
It's crowded. You're right. There's a lot of people who still travel, but there's also a lot of people who take trips. So I think that what we don't have a lot of competition on is exactly what we do. So exactly what we do is provide incremental profitability for hotels, and there's no one else really doing that globally almost. There's a couple of businesses like us out of Europe who do a similar thing, but we've got a really laser focus on how do we make more money for our hotel partners? How do we not only fill their empty beds, how do we allow them to get bookings early so they can yield up on other channels? How do we allow them to sell more F&B, sell more spa, sell more ancillary? So how do we make them hire what we call RevPAR, so revenue per available room? That's a really key focus. And there isn't anybody else really doing that anywhere. So that's a really interesting advantage we have. And from a customer point, there's lots of places you can buy travel, but if you go to Flight Center or if you go to Booking.com or if you go to Expedia, everybody sells at pretty much the same price, what's called bar or best available rate. And then the hotel website's the same. What we do is we sell for well below bar. So we will not only be at less money than the actual cost of the room, we'll also give you breakfast and dinner and club room and whatever else the deal has. So we're a much better value proposition for our customers, and that's really allowed us to stand out and bootstrap from day one, and that we're very differentiated. We invest a lot in content. So we'll have videos of all our properties. We'll write thousands of words on our properties. We'll have a magazine. We've got a TV show. We've got all these sort of content properties. And we really want to make our hotel partners shine and give our customers a great understanding of the trip they're booking, and not try and pull the wool over their eyes or mislead them, but to give a really honest appraisal. This is the hotel you're booking. This is the cost, and this is why you should go.
I'm guessing this is the whole the start of this business is one of those chicken and egg situations, because you're trying to say to the hotels or the resort partners, whatever, that they need to give something to you at a certain price or a very low price. And you obviously then want to get the customers in, but the customers aren't going to come without the hotels being in there.
Sure.
And the hotels aren't going to give you those prices until they can see the customers. So you're in that chicken and egg situation. How did you, you know, in those early days, how did you convince the hotels or the resorts to give you what you needed, which was, you know, high-end, high-quality hotels and holidays at a price that nobody else had?
There's two elements to that question, or two elements to the answer. The first, I guess every marketplace has a chicken and egg issue, buyer and seller matching issue. Ours is probably less pronounced than a booking.com or a Seek or a real estate. And those guys are classic marketplaces. We're a curated marketplace. So we didn't need every single hotel in Australia or on earth to be part of our platform before it could launch. So if you're a traditional marketplace, if you're a realestate.com or Seek, you need a critical mass of sellers before you get any buyer. So you need a significant capital investment. You need to have that great breadth of product. We didn't need that because we just needed one deal or two deals maybe. So it's a much more curated marketplace offering, and that allowed a slight alleviation of the chicken and egg problem. Your question though is right in a sense that we didn't walk up to Ritz-Carlton day one and run a Ritz-Carlton deal. We didn't go up to Park Hyatt and run it. We didn't go up to Sofitel. So we certainly weren't working with the absolute premium properties probably for 3 or 4 or 5 years. And we've gradually climbed up that luxury ladder, so to speak. So our very first deals were for really boutique properties that didn't have a brand at all, but saw the benefit in our product. And then we started working with really big family-owned boutiques, like a hotel like Catatani in Phuket, which is a very successful big hotel, doesn't have that brand name. Then we started moving on to bigger brands, and gradually went through, and now we've got agreements with almost all the big brands we work with and have a sort of master services agreement with. So we've gone from one extreme to the other. But it's very much a matter of getting the trust, and so now we're working with the likes of Oman, who don't really work with anyone online yet work with us, one of the most premium travel brands in the world, work with Kempinski, work with Hyatt's Hotel. So we work with almost everyone now, but that didn't happen overnight. That's an eight year journey.
How did you? Because I'm interested that, you know, day one when you go, right, well, we've got to get a deal. I mean, what did you, you know, did you happen to know someone in the first? I mean, who was the first hotel, and did you know someone there? Did you knock on a door?
Just to explain, so the first business we had was called deals.com.au, which was not travel focused. It was local focused. It was restaurants, spas. But we did some travel as well. So we got approached by the odd travel, local, more of a B&B style. I think the very first one approached us and said, can we do something? We did. It was a really, really successful result. Then we had a guy called Mark, who I went to uni with, who Jeremy and I are good friends with, and he was our first travel sales guy. And we were really lucky because Mark, another ex-lawyer, funnily enough, just had this unbelievable ability to create commercial outcomes that were favorable for the hotel and for the customer. And he was just a freakish talent and was able to think differently. And sort of three of us, and then Josh, who was another co-founder slash partner in the early days, we bought his business. So the four of us effectively just developed the model as we went along. And it was iterated over years, and there was a lot of trial and error, and all three of those guys gradually sort of exited the operations in time, but we all played a pretty big role in developing the product. It gradually evolved over 9 years, and it's still evolving. Right. But in the early days there was a lot of outbound. It still is out. Most of our business is outbound, so we'll go to hotels and negotiate over a period of 6 to 12 months sometimes, and it's an unusual concept for a hotel to understand.
Give us an example of something that you did wrong in those early days that you look back now and just think, you know, that you would do massively differently now.
Probably the biggest one is we had this local business that was nothing wrong with the business, the Groupon style business, and Groupon's still a very successful business, and Wouch is a very successful business in the UK. They can make a lot of money, these businesses, but it's unit economics need a lot of scale for it to work. If you don't have scale, it doesn't really work. So we got scale. We tried to get scale by buying more and more businesses, and we did that relatively successfully because we were able to get some businesses really cheaply that corporates had started and largely stuffed up. So that was a good run. But then we probably bought a bunch of businesses and we just shouldn't have. We bought a business called Brands Exclusive and probably have lost $50, $60, $70 million on that acquisition just through opportunity cost and through acquisition cost and through sort of distraction. And we bought another bunch of businesses that we shouldn't have bought. We kind of knew at the time it wasn't smart, but you sort of get sucked into that deal fever and go ahead with it. And that's also we've had a really strong underlying core business that's papered over those mistakes. This is a game. We stopped making these mistakes about 3 years, 3-4 years ago, but there's a 3 or 4 or 5 year period where we continually made stupid acquisitions and certainly in hindsight shouldn't have. And that's probably the biggest mistakes we made.
I want to talk about a couple of the other I'm going to ask you a couple more questions about Luxury Escapes because I just a little bit more nitty gritty stuff. And I get that you've stepped aside as the CEO, so you may not even know the answer to some of these. I want to get an example. I want to understand where your traffic comes from the website. What's the most successful channel for you guys in terms of driving traffic to the site?
I think if you look at us,
and you mentioned the TV show and the magazine, and I'd like to hear more about those. But you know what sort of contributes that traffic for you?
When you look at traffic, we're an email business largely, so we still send the daily email updates. So a lot of our traffic and most of our traffic still comes from our members, our 2 million plus members around the world who get and open our emails most days. So that's a big source of traffic. I think the question you might be asking is where do your members come from?
So where do you recruit a new where do you recruit a new person
from? Yeah, because we're a two-stage business.
How do they find out about you?
So we need to A, get the member, then B, get the sales. It's a little bit different to other businesses, but in terms of where do we get them from, there's a real combination. I don't think what we do is super unusual in most sense. So now digital marketing obviously plays a big role, be it your Google, your Facebook, your affiliate publishers. Retargeting, all that stuff, which everybody does now. So, in the early days, what we really built our business on was newspapers.
Okay,
and it sounds a bit weird because who buys newspapers now? But certainly in Australia, people do. And funnily enough, the travel component of the newspapers has been the only growth area in revenue for them in probably the last decade. It's been a significant growth area. So the travel part of the papers on weekends probably tripled in size since we really started the segment and started marketing. It was Mark's idea originally, and we got on board pretty quick. And we were in the early days able to market it, put an ad in the newspaper, and it might cost you 10 grand and you make 20 grand. It certainly doesn't happen anymore. But back then, you could have this arbitrage. And you sort of find that silver bullet, and we just literally found it by accident. It really grew our business and how we were able to sort of bootstrap to 350 million turnover. We started newspapers first, then pivoted a bit more to a lot more digital, and now we've sort of got a range of different marketing tools. And you mentioned TV and magazine being really interesting ones. But we're able to do that because the nature of the travel business is really not only it's viral, but it's beautiful images. It's really impulsive. So it drives the right behaviours in viewers. So it lends itself to content really well. We're in part as almost as much of a content business as we are an e-commerce business. How do we maximize that content, which drives engagement, drives sales?
Yeah, I think that's a fantastic point to make. That you just said there, that you're as much a content business as you are a holiday business. It's a lot of people need to get their head around that publishing content is such an important part of their business. I met a little startup on Monday, and she does ceramics, and she's got sort of 4,500 people on Instagram, and that's where all of her business comes from. And she still to this day can't get her head around how it is so easy to make something beautiful, take a beautiful photo of it, share it on Instagram, and she makes sales from it.
It's
a great opportunity. Give me something that doesn't work for you. Is there a channel that you guys have spent money on or tried that that doesn't work?
I think when you say it doesn't work, you're going to get a different ROAS and different channels. So we get the best out of
Yeah, poor return of invest, return on investment, yeah.
I think TVs we've had a mixed bag with. We've seen some TV – I'm talking about TVCs rather than TV shows. Yeah. TVCs, we probably haven't really cracked that riddle. One of our bigger escapes, which is a business that's comparable to us based out of the UK, but they've built their business on TV. So they've had a great result on TV, whereas we sort of built our business on newspapers and digital. So it's, we're taking a different approach to it. Possible we never really nailed our creative, whereas Secret Escapes have amazing creative. So that could be the reason. Maybe Australians view TV differently to Europeans. So we still do a bit of TV, but it hasn't been the success that even or Trivago's had here with TV or Booking.com had in the last few years. So there have been travel businesses that have really exploited TV very well. I wouldn't say we're one of them. Radio, we've got a radio show with on Macquarie with Steve Price, which is we like content-based show, which we love. We haven't had, other than that, haven't had massive success on radio either. So some of those above the line. It's also really hard to attribute. And when you're a digital business, you have a great bias to strong attribution because you can't attribute at home or radio or TV. Yeah. We tend to be a bit more reticent. We've got a really good marketing team now that have come from big brands that probably understand it better and that I think we'll have more success than certainly I had when I was running all that marketing piece.
I think Booking.com, I would probably argue its success has come out of its creative, because I think it's had a couple of good years of really, really good creative ideas, like, you know, that Booking.com, Booking.yeah type thing. And, you know, I think that's triggered almost an expression in people's vocabulary that, you know, that's become a, you know, something that people might actually say to each other, which is, you know, the big thing that you want to crack in advertising. But the other thing I was going to quickly ask you then is you're a 2 million emails, you're an email led business. What are you using software wise to drive that part of the business?
So we moved to Salesforce Marketing Cloud relatively recently, so probably the last 6 months. So we had been we've used Sales Cloud forever, Service Cloud for a number of years, and Marketing Cloud was the one we haven't gone to. We used a different business called Sale Through, which just became a bit inappropriate for us, and also we were by far their biggest Australian client, so it just didn't sort of work. Salesforce, certainly from an email perspective, been really good. From a journey and automation perspective, we're still going through that journey, pardon the pun, ourselves. So we're not quite where we need to be. But ultimately, our goal was to have a fully personalized email journey every day, to have fully personalized customized customer journeys across a whole gamut of different environments, which is where one of our big sort of areas of growth can come from, is how do we match our user experience with what people really want, rather than being a dumb email blaster, which we've historically been. How do I, if you like skiing holidays and hate beach holidays, how do I make sure that you see our ski holidays? And it's becoming even more relevant now. We've got a lot more content on the site. We've got more partnership managers across the world. We're getting better at it. So we've got lots of tours. We've got lots of hotels. We want to make sure that you actually see the property or the tour that most interests you. And that's based on your behavior over the journey.
And it's, you know, I still can't get my head around how some big brands in Australia fail to do that customization particularly well. I mean, I was talking about Dimmocks the other day, and of all the businesses and all the industries that ought to get their shit together, it's bookstores, you know. But I still get, you know, I've bought multiple books from them, and they have my membership card on file. They know what I've bought, but yet I still get emails that look like just blanketed emails that go out to everybody with, you know, 12 book recommendations in that I have absolutely no interest in reading any of them.
I think most businesses haven't got it right. I think you put a can on one hand, right, businesses have done it really well. So I think it's true. And even in the US, I think it's done poorly. So it's hard. And ultimately, there's also a risk in getting it wrong. So what you don't want to do is serve the complete wrong thing. So at the moment, we send out emails based on hero strength. So how good is this package? Is this an amazing Maldives package, the best in the world, or is it a Thailand package? We had a Thailand package last week, so, or a Sydney package, or we've had a bunch of Sydney on. So we've always done it purely by, we think, how profitable will the deal be for us? But what we need to get to is how appropriate is the content for each single person? And that, I think, will give us a quantum leap in terms of certainly engagement and then hopefully revenue as well.
How much data do you have about, you don't have to answer this because it might scare people, but how much data do you have and collect about those people that are visiting your websites in Salesforce? Are you looking at how frequently they're visiting? Are you looking at preferences in terms of pages and hotels that they're looking at?
We're just going through this journey now. So it's probably a little bit early, but obviously we don't use third party data. It's all our own data.
The point of it isn't to
invade people's privacy. It's to give you as a customer something a much more relevant and useful experience and not waste your time. So we only use our own data. We don't use third party. And if you've spent an hour looking at a Maldives deal and called us and spoken about this Maldives deal, but didn't end up buying for whatever reason, That to us tells us you want to see more about these deals. So we want to try and make sure you don't miss one. By contrast, if you hate skiing and have never ever clicked on a ski deal, there's no point in giving you three Japanese ski deals next week. So let's make sure we see how people went on. We don't want to waste people's time. And if you do click on an email or click on the site, let's customize that experience to you as best we can. And that might mean also showing less deals. It might mean maybe only show 10 products instead of 60, because we see you don't want to look at 60 deals. You just want to look at a couple of things that's really relevant to you. Aggressive for us is how do we make the experience more enjoyable?
Yeah. The last question I have for Luxury Escapes, the call to action on your website, the refer a friend, seems to be quite prominent. Can you talk me through what sort of success you have with that? Is that a key kind of resource in terms of collecting, new email addresses? Does it work?
I'm glad you asked, because funnily enough, we had a very strong refer a friend in our early days of the business, and we gave basically 10% of whatever the friend purchased in credit. So it could be thousands of dollars in credit, but it's justifiable. And then for a number of years, we actually didn't have a refer a friend, and we went through a whole tech journey where we rebuilt our platform, and it just became something that we sort of pushed back. And literally the last couple of weeks, we put it back on just because the consumer demand for people were referring anyway. And it was just a great chance for us to A, push that referral, and B, reward our referrers because they're doing the right thing by us. We should be rewarding it. So we finally put it back on. We've seen a lot of referrals in the last 2 weeks, well into the hundreds. Our business really grew on the back of grew on the back of newspaper ads being successful. One of the big issues we have as a business is because our pricing is so much lower than everyone else, the most common thing we hear is, I would have bought from you, but you just sound too good to be true. And then you layer in the fact that we're selling a holiday to Thailand or Bali or Maldives or US. It's not the kind of thing you want to get wrong because you're in a foreign country and it's far away and spend a lot of money. So the gap trust factor is our biggest challenge, our biggest barrier to conversion. But a referral, someone who's actually been on Luxury Escape, and if you ask 97% of our customers, they love us with an NPS of 75 and a CSAT above 95. They're our best customer. They're our best sales team. They're the people going out and telling 10 friends, you got to go on Luxury Escapes. It's the best I've ever had. So it's a great chance to refer people who've been doing the right thing by us for a number of years.
I've got a couple of other questions about a couple of your other projects before we finish up. The ones that jumped out to me, number one, Blue Thumb. I've actually bizarrely been on Blue Thumb, and I had a look through it. I get an email from, and do you know what? I'm now going to forget what it is. But I get an email from an American brand that does street art every day. I can't remember what it is. And
the biggest one in the US is probably Saatchi Art, but I don't know how much street art they do.
This was more
First Dibs, which is another one, but that's more high end.
I'm actually just scrolling through my emails right at this moment to work out who the hell it is. Cause I have bought stuff from them but on the back of having gone through and seen, theirs, I had found, Blue Thumb just give everyone a quick overview about what Blue Thumb does.
So Blue Thumb was one of the first sort of seed investments Jeremy and myself did. We had a small chunk of Menulog, and after that sold, that was the first investment we made. And it's essentially an online marketplace for art, really local Australian artists, and probably the biggest collection of Aboriginal art by sheer number that you can buy. And one thing, I've historically haven't been a big art guy, largely because I knew nothing about it, and I was just too nervous and embarrassed to walk into an art gallery and be scorned by the gallerist. So why we really liked it, and why I really liked it, is it really democratized a section of commerce that had been highly elitist. And yeah. Most galleries still charge 50%+ to their artists. You get some really great galleries as well who have amazing selections. But for a sort of layman, which I absolutely put myself in that category, it's really hard to buy art. You got to go to IKEA or something like that. So we want to be that sort of middle ground. The guys want to be a middle ground between sort of the really cheap prints and obviously where you start getting $10,000 plus. So Blue Thumb's sweet spot is probably that $1,000 to $750 artworks, where they're really nice looking artworks. If you're not a sort of expert collector, but you want something on your walls, there's probably no better place to look. And the beauty is because there's no the middleman, it's an artist putting that primary works directly on Blue Thumb. So artists get far more money than they get anywhere else. So some artists that make upwards of $1 million a year,
right,
simply selling on Blue Thumb and Saatchi, which is a US equivalent. So there's an amazing upside for artists. It's another sort of win-win that we love. Yeah. Like luxury escapes mold. So artists win, customers win by paying a great price and getting the art directly, and Blue Thumb just sits in the middle.
Yeah. I found it whilst you were talking there. It's called One Times Run. It's 1X Run. So it's www.one, yeah. One the number one with an X and then run, run.com. And it's, yeah, basically a lot of street artists, or you know, it's what I would consider fairly underground artists, but also some photographers as well. And the point is, I think the product's there for sale. They're singular runs, so you either buy them and then they're gone. So, and some of them have two or three, and then some of them have 30, but you know, whatever. But that's kind of then how I found you guys, because I was looking for a localized, version of that. I think it's interesting that you say that, that people aren't art people, and I'd be exactly the same as you. I don't really know what I'm looking at. But interestingly, I bought things off One Time to Run that just because I liked them. I didn't know whether they were particularly,
sure,
you know, worth much, or you know, and those kind of things. So, I think that sort of marketplace is a fantastic opportunity for artists to get out there and reach more people. But the other one that I'm really interested in, again, because I've had a bit of interest in the background for previous clients, so this is bookworld.com.au. Which is the place, it's a, you know, again, marketplace to find beauty, health, wellness appointments across Australia. You're a non-exec director there. I'm assuming you're an investor. Where's Bookwell actually based?
I've actually become sort of exec chair recently. So since sort of my time's opened up with Lux, I've sort of come in and we're doing a Series A round for the business now. It's a really exciting business, and it's in a similar sense that win-win. This is just another classic win-win-win. So it's the team behind Eat Now, which obviously joined forces with Menulog. So Matt Dyer and Nathan Airy, who are two of the real operating superstars behind that business. They went to Just Eat after the sale of Menulog to Just Eat for almost $1 billion. Yeah. And these guys were as good operators as I've ever come across. And they wanted to have another go. So after the great success of Menulog, they wanted to do the same for beauty, essentially. So whilst obviously Menulog was a food product, this is a beauty booking business. So if you want to purchase, or if you want to book a haircut, a massage, or a beauty treatment, waxing or nails,
yeah,
mani-pedi or tanning, you can do it on the site. We've got 1,200 odd salons on there. So it's, in a similar sense, it's just ultimate convenience for customers, and 42% of our bookings are happening outside business hours. So people want to book outside business hours, but no one's answering the phone. So it's a great way for obviously sellers to capture lost bookings and customers to book much more easily. But a really great part of that business is it's effectively a marketing relation platform for venues. And if you're a hair venue or a massage venue, it's almost impossible to market. So if you think, how do you market? You're not going to go above the line. It's never going to return for you. Digital doesn't really work either, because Google probably doesn't work, it's too competitive, and Facebook's a branding play which doesn't work. So you've got very few options. Your only real option is hoping people walk past and notice you, or maybe some referral traffic. So what we do is we create a marketing platform for these guys where they can contact their customers, they get new customers, they pay a tiny fee for existing customers and a slightly bigger commission for new customers, but they're still making money because if you're a massage salon, you're your main costs are your rent and your wages, which happen regardless, and your utilization is sort of 50%. So we're really able to, famous luxury escape, selling empty rooms, we're selling empty spots for these venues. So we think we can make, we know we make these, our customers a huge amount of money, and we're just clipping the ticket on the way through to a small degree and giving our customers a much more convenient way to book and get reminders. So when you've been 4 weeks and you need another haircut, we'll shoot you an SMS saying, don't forget your haircut in 2 weeks, here's some available time. So just a much better user experience for our customers.
I guess the challenge I was going to say with this, having had some experience working with a customer in that sort of beauty space, is that some of them are very backwards, the wrong word, but that some of them are very tech, unsophisticated. That's the perfect word. That's exactly what it was. How do you bridge that gap in a marketplace when you're an artist and you're selling art? You've probably got a bit of a handle on the online side of things. You know, you might be using Etsy or Pinterest or Facebook or building your own website. The beauty industry tends to be very unsophisticated in a tech space. How do you bridge that gap between, you know, those businesses that don't understand all this kind of stuff and you guys that are realize that this is a good opportunity for them?
I think it's a great point. That's one of the real sort of core strengths of the business, and that's what we do. We provide a platform so a big chunk of beauty businesses are using pen and paper.
Yeah, absolutely.
How efficient is that? Yeah, you're giving a haircut, you're putting the phone to your ear, you're sort of craning your neck, you're writing it down, there's double bookings everywhere, it's tart. We give our salons a platform for free. So if you want to pay for it, it can be upwards of $3,000 a year. We give that for free. And our platform is as good, in some ways better than these platforms. So you can run your, you can set your roster in your door, you can set your appointments, you can set your reminders, all this kind of stuff. You can, if you're doing a 4-hour cover, you can schedule someone in the middle. There's lots of really strong, great tools. And this will keep growing and keep getting better. But at the moment, even now, we're a sort of market leading platform. We're taking these businesses that haven't used technology and making it really simple for them to use it. So we'll guide them through the process. We've got account managers, we'll guide them through the process. When they want to set up their marketing automation, which are their reminders and their rebookings, we'll help them set it up. And it's really templated. Yeah. So one of the really cool things that business does is if you haven't had a massage for a year, what we'll do is we'll send an automated reminder with a discount. So we'll say, we've missed you, we haven't seen you for 12 months, and the vendor chooses what to set the discount at. So they might set it at 20% or 25% or $20, whatever it is. And that we're getting a really great conversion rate, upwards of 5-10%. On these lost customers who the salon who just assume will never come back. So they're getting these customers back for virtually for free through using a really simple platform. So what it really is about is how do we help these salons make money, and how do we help these salons who probably aren't great with technology use technology in a really productive way?
Last couple of questions. I normally ask people about their favorite brands, but given your background, I'm going to ask you, if you were on your website, if you're on Luxury Escapes, where would you can choose anywhere, where would your next holiday be?
I got two very young kids, so we're somewhat restricted.
How old are they?
They're 2 and 4.
Right.
So they've been to a few places, but it does sort of limit you a little bit. But
mate, I've got a 6-month-old and a 3-year-old, so I feel your pain.
There you go. So you're worse than us. But
yeah. I'm not having a luxury holiday for the next 10 years, mate. It's never going to, anyway.
And funnily enough, we actually do some stuff that is pretty good for kids, but you just got to look for it.
Yeah.
It's most of our product is really, it's sort of a 40 plus, as in kids aren't so dependent, or if you haven't had kids yet, that's what we're really good for. But there's definitely a cohort of families who love using us, and we'll do interconnected rooms and villas, and you just got to know what to look for, and we've got a filter by family. So that's the one. We're actually off next week, assuming
you can get a babysitter then for a week, where would you take the wife?
Yeah. Oh, we just came back from Maldives, and that was an unbelievable experience. Right. So I'd probably potentially go back there. There's just so many fantastic places. We went to a tour of Jordan, from Wadi Rum and Petra, and that was through our Luxury Escapes exclusive tour provider, which was unbelievable. So there's no shortage of places. I love Asia. I think Asia is still probably one of my really go-to places. The value is unbelievable. The service is phenomenal. It's obviously the weather's great and the food's fantastic. So I love going to Asia. There's so many places to go to. I think part of Luxury Escapes is about discovery. So we just love telling our customers about places they wouldn't have otherwise gone to. And the key stat that really underlies our business for both customer and for hotel is 91% of our customers weren't planning on going to the hotel they went to until we told them about it. Yeah. So it was a genuine platform of discovery and impulse that you really can't get anywhere else.
What's the last two questions? What's new for you? What have you got planned for the rest of the year? We're coming to the halfway point. You know, something exciting that you guys got happening this year.
I think luxury skates, Matthew, there's lots happening. We rebuilt our platform last year, so it's now really able to start building product on top of that. So we're in the final throes of beta testing our flight system, which has sort of been 5 years in the making and super exciting. Probably for the first time ever, our tech team is now cutting edge technology. We've got an unbelievable tech team led by guys called Tim and Shai out of Sydney, and these guys, superstars, and are now market leading.
Yeah.
We built a flight caching platform that nobody on earth has. So if you used to probably buy flights with Skyscanner or Expedia or wherever, where you put your dates in and it searches for sort of 10 seconds and then gives you back a day of flights, our system will give you 365 days of flight costs without any search. It's all caged. So it's an unbelievable user experience. You can the best user experience in the world at the moment.
I tell you what, there's a guy on Twitter who always talks, a guy called Tom Goodwin. He's quite famous for a famous quote, which I won't go into right now. But he always talks about why nobody's ever built a platform that just says that when the user says, I don't actually care when I go, I just want the cheapest option to go, you know, any point throughout the year. So, you know, that sounds like a massive, massive game changer in terms of the marketplace.
Yeah, I think hopefully Tom looks at Luxury Escapes because he'll have his problem solved. Because you can literally check. You can first check by month and see what month's the cheapest. Then you click on the month and it shows sort of by day.
Yeah.
We think it's – so Armadale, who's our GDS, said no one's done this before. Yeah. Jetstar said no one's done this before. And we've sort of linked to their case directly. So it's really exciting to be able to have a product. So we've got about 20,000 people beta testing it now, and it should launch to everyone probably in about 3 weeks' time.
Okay.
The guys have done a stupendous job getting this out on time, on budget, and exceeding all our expectations. That's a big one. We've launched experiences. So a bit like Airbnb, you can now buy extra massages for all-inclusive, full board, club, whatever the hotel sort of wants to offer. You can get your sailing trips, your food tours, whatever sort of ancillary product we can offer, we have. We've got insurance integrated in the flow now. So there's lots of sort of core basket size improvements we're implementing now. And obviously personalization is a really big one that we're launching.
Yeah.
So there's some really cool stuff happening on the site that hopefully customers love.
All right. Perfect. Last question then. If anybody wants to get hold of you, if they've got a question that they a burning question about travel, startups, you know, all those kind of bits and pieces, what's the best way to get hold of you?
Probably LinkedIn. Okay. So I usually sort of answer my questions on LinkedIn that come through, and pretty easy to find on there. So it's probably the easiest way to get to me.
Awesome. Well, we'll put your link in the show notes as well for everybody to see that. So, mate, look, thank you very much for your time today. Look, it's been really informative. I am not going to tell my wife about Luxury Escapes just yet, because otherwise I'm going to be getting...
Hopefully she listens to the podcast.
Mate, she's never listened to a single one of them, don't say that. So I don't have to worry about that. But if she signs up to your website, I'll be getting emails forwarded to me from her pretty much every day. So, well, might just...
Sounds like a smart lady, so hopefully she hears that.
But, mate, thank you very much for your time today. It's been great.
Thanks, Tom. Pleasure. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much. That is it for this episode. Thank you for tuning in. We hope to see you next week.